Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking to talk. As always, I'm joined by my co-host Martin, the birds and the bees, McMahon. Martin, it's been a long time since I had to have the chat with you, mate, but like honestly, I'm finding out more and more that you're getting worse as you get older.
I hope so, Tony. I want to die disgracefully. Absolutely disgracefully.
Well, you better hurry up because you haven't got long left, mate. I'm kidding, lads, but you know, Martin got his NCT this week, you know?
Yeah, I'm okay for another while. Don't have to go back to the, what was it, proctologist?
No, it was the NCT centre up on the M50. Your man 50 quid and he gave you a cert. Much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by occupational therapist, sex educator and teacher of awkward parents like me, Sarah Sproul. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Martin. Thanks so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
It's a really, we've spoken to a lot of great people. We've spoken to Caroline West. We've spoken to Arpita Chakraborty. We've spoken to all of these experts and they were all saying to me, oh, you must talk to Sarah. And I said, I got to avoid this. So because they made me really uncomfortable. And then I realized when I looked into what you did, that this was really going to put me on the back foot as a father of two young ladies. Mm. So I suppose I'm going to jump straight in with that. When you in the course, actually explain to the listeners what you actually do first and foremost.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So I support parents to talk to their school age kids, normally just elementary or national school age kids, about sexuality, relationships and consent. And the idea is that as parents, we're giving them the skills and the abilities and the knowledge to go on and have enjoyable, intimate relationships as adults or young adults.
And that enough has made me feel like I just want to stop the conversation. But no, I suppose it is really, really something that we need to talk about. When we spoke to our Pete and we spoke about, I made the point about the lad who's the bystander. And I didn't want to be the bystander anymore when it came to toxic masculinity. Okay. Mm-hmm. When it comes to being the parent, the father is often the bystander. He leave that up to mammy. Do you find that the case a lot?
So my work takes me around Ireland. I speak to groups of parents in national schools all over Ireland. I've been up as far as Donegal and down to Cork and everywhere in between. And the majority of the parents that will come to those things are mums. We do get some dads and other caring adults, but generally mums. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And whether that's because it's part of the caring role and that is generally seen as the female thing, or whether it's just men copping out, possibly because men's sexuality is sort of maybe considered dangerous, perhaps. Mm. And so you put that in relationship with young girls or young boys, and then you've got what all men, I can only imagine, would be like scary times. You know, how do you be a parent and talk about sex with your daughters and your sons, particularly if you're a dad?
Yeah, so actually, I think you're right there. It was only recently my own mom said to me that men's voices even can be scary. Mm. Even just the voice can be scary to young girls. Mm. And, you know, you have to be careful. You've got to moderate your voice properly. I mean, there's a lot involved for men to do it. Is it a cop out? Yeah, I absolutely think so. Yeah, of course.
And because there is such value, dads bring such value to their daughters in terms of modeling that, you know, as a man, your daughter can talk to you as a man about things to do with their bodies and their sexuality, because the reality of it is the majority of girls will go into women who have relationships with men. And how wonderful could it be that those girls have had an experience of being able to talk openly about themselves or just sexuality in general with the man that's been the closest to them, you know, in their growing up?
Yeah, well, dad is the example, isn't he? Dad is the first and foremost man that makes an impression. Mm. And, you know, also, and we're all imprinted with it. All of us, both genders imprinted. So, yeah, I think men have a huge part to play.
Do you know, my dad, for most of my growing up, sported a very large red beard. And wouldn't you know now, my spouse has a very large red beard. So, I, you know, I'm not saying that I did that consciously, but there's something about that, isn't there?
There is, yeah. There absolutely is.
You have a series of videos up on YouTube, which we'll add to the links for this, folks. I do advise you to check them out. But one that struck me was the age appropriate questions. Mm. Dealing with that, and I can only tell you that that would be the typical of me would be saying, "Wait till your mum comes home," or you know, can you give us a sense of what would be the best way that we should deal with that in age inappropriate? What we deem it to be age inappropriate? Because myself and Martin are both parents of two young ladies, but we could probably both say have different ideas of what the age differences are.
Yeah. So the first thing I say is that if a child asks you a question, it is age appropriate because whatever age they are, they have asked the question. Mm. So that's an age appropriate question for them. And so when you start from that perspective, then you can answer it without being worried about, oh, am I doing the wrong thing by giving my child this information? Your child wants that information and they have given you the credit by coming to you and ask them. Because here's the point, not every child feels they can ask a parent a question to do with sex or relationships. Some children just don't ask questions about anything and, you know, that's complex. And some kids will ask lots of questions, but they feel like they can't talk about sex. So the fact that your kid has asked you is awesome and really good. Then the question is, okay, so we're all human, even as parents, even though we like to think of ourselves as superheroes as a parent, we're not superheroes. We're normal everyday people muddling along and doing our best. And we all have an attitude about sexuality or feelings about our sexuality that impact on how we can answer questions. So I will be the last person to sit here and say, yes, every parent should answer questions in a matter-of-fact way, in a comfortable way, give their kid information and then ask their kid, is that enough information? I can't, in all good conscience, with my hand on my heart, say that's what parents should do. Mm. It's more like, okay, well, what do you feel comfortable doing? How can we be honest in these questions? Like, could we say, that's a really good question. I'm not sure of the answer, but can I get back to you this afternoon? Or that's a really good question. Do you know when I was young, kids weren't allowed to ask questions like that. I'm so glad you asked me. Or when I was young, if a child asked a question like that, my parents would say, go away with you now, out and play. You don't need to be knowing that now. Yeah. You know? So, I think even if we don't know the answer to the question, like, what is a clitoris? We can still say, and I hope you both know the answer to what is a clitoris. I'll just put that out there before I
we
go
do.
On.
Yeah. Tony's not so clear on where, but the what we have worked out.
I had mine taken out because I was having throat infections all the time.
Questions like that. So obviously you guys are going to handle those questions perfectly, but for people that don't feel comfortable, the go-to answer is, I love that you asked that question. I need some time to think about it. And then you go away and you ring up your friend, the only friend you have who knows how to talk about this sort of stuff. You know, we all have a friend who, when you're in the pub with them, will, be the one that drops a bombshell about who they were with the night before or something particular they tried with their partner and what that was like. Well, I have friends like that. I'm sure you do too. So we all have a friend that can talk about this stuff and they're a resource for us. And look, if you don't have that friend, I can be that friend for you. Like, you find me on social media and you start learning about what it sounds like to talk about these things in a way that is hopefully calm and sort of considered and smart. And
positive.
Yeah. Well, now that's an interesting word, right? Mm. Because some people, when they hear the word positive, they would say, oh, that means we're encouraging our young people or our children to explore sexuality or be sexual or have sexual relationships. And that's not what it is. It's more about approaching human sexuality as a neutral thing, just like we would do with our digestion or our muscles and our ability to play sport. It's just sexuality is a neutral part of being human.
Mm. Ireland in particular, and you're saying that we just approach it the same as everything. Yeah, but we have this sort of thing built into us.
Yeah.
And there is so much guilt and there is so much shame around sex. Do you find, I know my brother is in Australia. He has kids over there, primary school kids. Mm. He had to go to a pre, sex education talk. And he said all the Irish parents were down the back of the classroom, absolutely mortified at what they were. They got the lesson in advance and they were mortified, ashamed, embarrassed, hands in their heads. They weren't able to listen to what primary school kids in Australia were getting as a matter of course. Mm. Do you find that with Ireland? Do you find that we are so repressed?
Do you know, my parents are were missionaries. I grew up in a missionary family. So, while yes, I acknowledge that in Ireland, there is a particular set of circumstances around history and, you know, all that. Irish people, we're not alone. And I say we because I now have the Irish passport and I sleep with an Irish guy and my kids are half Irish. So I like to claim that pronoun for myself too. We're not alone. And I think sometimes when we default to that, oh yeah, we're Irish. And so this is really hard for us. I think we're doing ourselves a disservice because Irish people are incredibly sexual, you know, and you have a history of, you know, the Sheila na gigs and whatever. And I think it's not so much about beating ourselves over the head about, oh, we're all really repressed, but more about acceptance. I love that word. And in fact, as I'm talking about it, I'm getting goosebumps that how could it be possible to accept our starting point? Like, okay, so we've had all this history. Our parents said what they said to us. School did what it did to us. How can I say, okay, but I'm still okay. And I'm still the parent of my kids. And I'm just going to do the best I can. And I love that idea of doing the best I can. And what does the best that I can look like in this moment? And it may just be realizing that my kid just asked me a question and I'm incredibly grateful and still being really awkward, you know?
Yeah.
So I love this idea of that we're all different and we all have a different entry point to this part of life.
It was interesting you say that because we're just past the anniversary of the repeal movement. And obviously in this house, daddy would be daddy, but he'd also be sort of campaigning on the repeal and all of that stuff. And so when there were questions around the schoolyard, they'd come home and they weren't put to mammy. They were put to daddy. You know, dad knows about this stuff. And it was that awkward moment where, you know, we're passing these posters outside the schools that said, don't kill me or whatever evocative language was used. And I was able to talk about it in terms of choice, reproductive choices, bodily autonomy, and actually see a 9-year-old take that stuff on board. But I'd say it took me the guts of 10 days to get that little few sentences out of me in a way that I was coherent enough to actually give her the language to be able to say, well, because there was always simplistic stuff said in the schoolyard. It was I saw your dad had a repeal badge. He wants to kill babies, and you have to try and sit down and have that conversation and actually put it in such a way as, these are the reasons we need to do it, and this is why we don't want shame. We need to get remove that stigma. And I remember working. And I mean that, working to try and get the language right and talking to other people. And I hate to say it, almost workshopping it to a degree. But it helped. And then when it was all over, I remember my eldest saying to me, oh, thank God that's all over. You know, it was a release for them. And I didn't realize it was a release for them as much as it was for others. But I also know that on the other side, you know, where young ladies are coming into, they're maturing and they're coming into puberty and those sort of things. You know, that sort of stuff, I'm already uncomfortable just trying to get the words out. How do I talk about changes to their body, periods, talk about the need for these things and actually have my daughter be able to say to me, Dad, will you pick these up in Tesco for me or whatever it is? Because that's what's next. And I'm already, you can see me, I'm uncomfortable even getting the words out here. I'm trying to hide behind the bloody chair that I'm sitting on. Do you find that there's, and that's a really long-winded way of saying, do you think that we, as parents, should be preparing for these things well in advance, thinking them forward now, role-playing them almost?
That would be a great way if you have the capacity to think about these things ahead of time. And one of the things I say in my parent information evenings would be, if at all possible, to start early. So maybe role play with a friend who has a child of a similar age and can be the child, and you can practice, because you're right. Practicing these words, the more you say them, the more natural they will roll off the tongue. And I think we're in an unfortunate situation because most of our culture would say that we need to wait till our children are at sort of pre-pubescent or pubescent stage where we start to have these conversations, when the easier way to have them is to lay the foundations of them when our kids are young. Like, you can start talking about foundational concepts when our kids are toddlers, like 0 to 4. Imagine if we'd known how important it is to use accurate body parts when we had a newborn, you know, the names for accurate body parts. So when we were changing the nappy, do you remember when you took your newborn home from hospital? You were sort of like, what the fuck is going on? Who let me take this child home on my own? And how do I put them into the car seat anyway, you know? So, and then changing the nappy and looking at this set of genitals, and maybe they're different to the genitals you have on your body. And you're sort of going, okay, now how do I wipe this thing? And, you know, and I've got to put cream on it. Like, what is going on there? I'm touching someone else's vulva. Like, but what if we'd had the opportunity then to realize, okay, this is the start of building comfort. And what if I start practicing the word vulva when my child doesn't even know what I'm saying? And so that as they get older, then we are not only building up information for them, but we're building on our own skills as well. And for, you know, us in this room, but also people out there listening, that sometimes feels sad when I say that, because we have mostly missed, a lot of us have missed that opportunity. And so there's another opportunity to feel kind to ourselves, right? We didn't know. So here we are, and we're now doing the best we can. And so you're experiencing that now when you're thinking about periods and managing period products. And I love, Tony, the way that you really want to be there for your girls, you know, and to be open, and not every parent can do that. But it is a matter of being kind to ourselves and slowly trying to introduce the conversation, you know?
It was funny you said there, you know, and it sort of struck me when you were saying the first time somebody changed a nappy, and then it sort of struck me. I remember the first time I changed my little one's nappy, but it wasn't the first time I changed a nappy, and it never even crossed my mind that this would be somebody's first experience of changing a nappy. It never even crossed my mind that it would be somebody's first experience of changing one. I don't know where I probably changed my sister's nappies when she was small, but that was, it wasn't a new experience. And it really did strike me that you said for some people, this is the first time they've done it. So I suppose experience too, as a child yourself,
yes,
is giving you the tools to go forward.
Yes. And you raise a really good point, because some of us have the opportunity to practice, being with children that are not our own children, you know, and cousins or babysitting or whatever. And so, yeah, that does give us an opportunity to practice some skills for sure. Yeah.
What are the questions that, you know, I presume that the period question is the big one you get from men, how to talk sex with their daughters and boyfriends. That's one probably the most difficult one is talking boyfriends. And I don't mean saying, you know, oh, no boyfriends, blah, blah. I mean actual real conversations about, you know, is he nice to
you? I'm happy enough with the no boyfriend.
You know, by the time you get to the where it's actually serious boyfriends, you know that the no boyfriends rule doesn't work.
And that's a really interesting thing, because as our children get older, we realize we have less and less control. And that's the point, because they're growing into independent humans. And so that's that developmental stage. But a lot of us as parents, it's hard to transition from that, I am the director of my child's life, to I am now the supporter and the cheerleader of my child's life. And hopefully, if I've played my cards right, the person that they will come to for advice or support. So the boyfriend question, I was in some national school somewhere in Ireland, I can't remember where, and the question came up, when is it okay or age appropriate for girls, this particularly was about girls, to have boyfriends? And the accepted wisdom would be from sort of around puberty, kids of all genders start having sexual thoughts and being interested in whoever they happen to be interested in, whatever orientation they are. And so, you know, puberty starts from 8 up to 14. And I would say sort of from 10 to 13, young kids can be interested in having a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Now, don't freak out, because that's not what we think of as a girlfriend and a boyfriend or a just special friend. And I remember my first significant relationship lasted 6 months and I was 14 and it was conducted purely by notes. So I would write a note and then he would write a note and it would pass between our friends, you know, and that was incredibly significant relationship for me and I looking back. But, and so as a parent, if we can relax a little bit about, well, what does that actually mean? These first relationships where they're exploring what it feels like to be attracted to someone or have an erotic feeling. I think it's a way then we can start sort of calming down a little bit about it, because also it's like the runway to life. We don't start relationships. We don't go from 0 to 100. There's this buildup. And I would say to kids when I'm in the classroom doing their RSC that, and this mostly comes from boys, actually. Such an interesting question. If I want to have sex with someone, this is a question, how will I know what to do? Oh, my God, I love that question so much. Because, I mean, apart from which that shows sort of the pressure on boys and reflects that idea of how sexuality is somehow meant to be what's that word? Instigated.
Ingrained.
And the momentum needs to come from the male if we're talking sort of heterosexual relationships. So it shows that. But it's also like they're just going, help, what's going on here? The other question would be, how will I know whether I'm going to release semen or urine? Such a really sort of lovely question, because young kids, they don't sort of have that information. So what I say to them is, okay, imagine – can you remember when you first played sport? What's the sport? And they'll say, you know, hurling or, you know, gymnastics or whatever. And I go, okay, good. Can you remember? How good were you when you first started? And they mostly go, oh, I was really rubbish. And I go, right. And then how are you now with 6, 7 years experience? Oh, I'm way better and I know the rules and I know the players and I've got my team. I go, well, that's exactly the same when it comes to learning about our own body and being with someone else's body, that this is something that you slowly learn over time. And I think probably everyone in this room is still learning things about their body and their sexuality, maybe even to do with illness. You know, for me, it's the menopause or, you know, I live in a family that has chronic illness in our relationship. So throughout our lifespan, we are constantly learning. And I think that's a really, really, really important point to get across to all of us, not just our children, that over time, you slowly learn new things and it's a constant learning process.
Do you find parents receptive to the message?
The parents that come to my workshops are absolutely receptive. And the reason is that when we start talking with each other as a group of parents, the first question we ask ourselves is, why are we even in this room? What took you away from Love Island or Game of Thrones or whatever the thing is that you usually watch in the evening to come into this meeting hall in your local national school? And we write a list of what they hope for their kids, what they wish. If we could wave a magic wand, what would the skills be that we would give them that would support their relationships? And it's things like self-compassion, communication skills, respect for themselves and other people, assertiveness, just, you know, basic everyday life skills, knowledge of their own body. And so parents are really receptive because they want the best for their kids and they want to be that person that they can come to if they need support. So absolutely.
But the question there is, because these people have given up their time, shows a mindset that they want to be there.
Yes.
Which also brings us to the more, to the bigger question for the people who are uncomfortable being there. And we see it in the context of, you know, and I don't want to, I can just, let's play devil's advocate. The person says, well, not my little Jimmy or not my son or daughter or whatever the case may be. Is there an argument, therefore, that everybody should have some form of I almost want to use the word mandatory form of education when it comes to this?
I'm smiling at the question. I'm a therapist. I'm an occupational therapist. So my training, everything about my work would be no one has to do anything. that's absolutely where I come from on this. And at the same time, and this is one of those things where you're holding two equally valid competing ideas. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I know that, with information and support, it leads to healthier people, healthier relationships, healthier cultures.
Mm.
So, I'm going to sidestep that question just a little bit because I think, everyone has the right to live in their values as long as it's not sort of impinging on anyone else. And I think the complexity comes with when a parent has a particular value that, means that their child does not get information that could really help them in their decision making and in their life going forward. So, it's really, really complicated.
I think that's a really good way of phrasing it, though. It's the same for a lot of these things that we talk about in the wider, you know, when people came, oh, not all men, this nonsense kicked back. Well, we went, yeah, but definitely some. That's not an attack on everybody. You know, let's look at these things. Let's look at the issues and let's see where we can all be better. And if you can raise the average, if I want to go into my bloody financial mindset as I do too often, we start to say, well, that will, you know, it will filter through. It's very hard when it's something like this because everybody has our own prejudices, our own biases, and maybe our own values as well, where we think these are just naturally instilled. Whereas if we want to educate ourselves about these things, it's really important that we actually make ourselves uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to lie, like that sort of stuff does make me uncomfortable, but I know that I'll only know more if I get out of that comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
That going back to those conversations when particularly young boys, feeling the pressure to be young boys. Do you find that there's a lot of that is cultural or is that just, familial?
How could I know? I can't know because I have these lads with me in class for maybe, if I'm lucky, 5 hours, if I'm unlucky, 2.5 hours. So it's hard to tell. I think there is a strong cultural pressure to be the leader as a boy or a man, to be a leader. Like, okay, so I referenced Love Island there.
Mm.
I have a teenager in my house who is really interested in Love Island. So we have been now watching it for whatever it is, 2 weeks. And it's so interesting in there because the lads are there and they're, you know, trying to work out how to win the girl. And okay, they're there to win money as well. But just the gendered dynamics you see play out, such an interesting learning experience to watch with our kids, right? And some people have said to me when they've heard we're watching that, I go, why would you watch that? There's such bad stuff going on. But the whole point of parenting in this age with the kids going, you know, puberty into adulthood is to stand beside them as they sing the complexity of the world. We can't shield our kids from this stuff. So as a parent, you judge like, okay, is, you know, or you follow your child either in their interests. That's absolutely what's happened in our house this week. John and I have followed our child into her interest of Love Island and we sit there on the couch at 9 o'clock every night and, we react to the thing and we listen to what she says and we say our little bits if we have a chance to say our little bits, but that is parenting now. And it is in contrast to when our children are younger, but it's a very rich and exciting time because, as you know, I was saying to Martin earlier that parenting is not a one-way street. For me, I don't think it's ever been a one-way street because as soon as we become a parent, we're impacted by this new human, in what they do, in what they say, in what they're interested in. And so I learn from my child as they learn from me. And it's this lovely push and pull. And, I see that continuing. My mum would even say that. My mum's almost 70 and she sometimes will say, Sarah, the amount of learning that I've had to go through, even as her children are in their 30s and 40s, it never stops. Never stops.
I kind of agree with you. And I see it from very, very young in kids. And I mean really young. You know, a kid takes you off as a parent. They do an impression of you. That's them teaching you what you are like.
Yeah.
And they're telling you what they hear. And they're teaching you exactly what you're like, what they see you're like. I mean, mine in particular. Ugh, stop. They never stop. I mean, I have two of them that just constantly take me off. Constantly, yeah. Constantly. And what they're doing is telling me what I'm like as a parent.
Yeah. Degrading you.
They are.
And degrading you.
Well, the best thing, I suppose, my eldest said to me not recently, she goes, you're a very consistent parent. And I thought, well, that's great. I'll take consistent. Mm-hmm. I'll take consistent. I'm the same person every day. Yeah, I'll take that. That works.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, yeah, that was a compliment. Mm. You know, it was backhanded compliment, but it was a compliment.
I think it's a skill. If you can laugh at yourself too, from what they show you of you, like, I'm going to hands up. I'm a bit of an anxious person. I'm anxious for my kids. I'm anxious for my dogs. And we went for a walk, on the Hoth Cliff Path last summer, I think it was. And we had the two dogs and they were off the lead and we had the kids. And I was walking along with John, my spouse, and I was just saying, John, the dogs, John, the kids, John, 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 like this. Yeah. And I have never lived that down because every time I get a tiny bit anxious, my kids will parrot at me, John, the kids, John, dogs, John, John, John. And I'm like, I just face palm, you know, like, okay, I claim it. I own it.
Yeah. And it's true though, isn't it? They do. They do teach us just as much. Absolutely. Yeah. And it only gets better as they get older.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think so.
I agree with you on that. And I just think that, but if we're, as you say, able to laugh at ourselves, there are learnings in all of those. There are perils in there. Like when you're, I do that cliff top walk with the girls every few weeks. And I know the only reason they actually go along with me is because they want to go for chips afterwards.
Yeah.
They'll tolerate me for a while, you know, and then it's like, okay, straight down to get the chips now, please, dad.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that is a give and take, I suppose, and accommodation there. Mm. So here's a selfish question. And I mean this as someone who's seen his eldest daughter is now a teenager and she's starting to, as I see it, go away from me. Mm. How do I stand beside her? As you said earlier, you tried to stand beside her. Is it just I have to sit down and watch Love Island now?
Well, I think partly it is a little bit about following their interests. Mm. And I think Martin just said before about how it gets more interesting as they get older. That's not everyone's lived experience, Martin. You know, I have mum friends who loved the baby stage and the toddler stage. I barely survived that stage as a parent, right? So I think for some of us, we can get really engaged in their interests. And yeah, like, would I choose to watch Love Island? No. Would I choose to listen to 103.8 or whatever on the car? Yeah, not necessarily, but it gives me connection with my kids.
Here comes Billie Eilish.
I mean, one of my kids came into the bedroom this morning with listen to this song. Played me a song. I would never choose to listen to that song. Uh-huh. But I was like, okay, yeah, all right. I'm open. My job is to stay open and to show you that when you come and tell me anything, even though it's the most inane, boring thing ever, I will listen and be grateful for any connection whatsoever.
What about parents that overdo it? Helicopter parents. What about those parents, the ones that overdo it, that are so clued into the trying to be clued into the kid's life that the kid really ends up resenting them?
Yeah. So we all have different parenting styles, and I'm not here to bash anyone's parenting style. What I would say though is every decision we make has a consequence. So if you feel very strongly that protecting your child is the most important thing for you, and for some of us, if we're overly anxious or whatever, maybe that's the only way we can parent. The consequence of that is that our children, when they're at an age where we can still have influence, do not experience risk or sort of any sort of thing that is difficult. And so then we're not in the position where we can help them through small risks and small harms, which then teach them how to manage big risks and big harms, right? So there's a knock-on effect afterwards in their older years. But, you know, we all are who we are and we can only be the best parent we can be. But I certainly, my philosophy would be that give your kids a chance to get it wrong when the stakes are low, so that they learn the skills for when they get it wrong, when the stakes are high, because they will get it wrong when the stakes are high. I absolutely got it wrong when the stakes are really high, and I know I'm not alone.
Oh, I did it last week. That's why I'm smiling here now. I did it last week. my eldest was running in the Dublin Juvenile Championships, and we had a fault with the starters blocks and the thing, and of course, naturally enough, she was quite upset. And idiot daddy just said, well, you know, went straight into cold and calculated and said, you either win or you learn. And this is a learning.
Yeah, I'm just like,
yeah, well, pure arsehole. Like, you know.
Well, but like, I wouldn't say pure arsehole. No, I wouldn't. Because the reason is because I think as parents, a lot of the time when we're doing something, we think it's because we're trying to care for our kid. So much of the time, I cannot cope with the huge emotion and the pain that I see in my kid. And so I'm doing a self-protection thing, like you said there, just you either learn or you win or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas could it be possible for us to go, that I can see how painful that was. That was just completely shit. Mm. I'm sorry. And just really be able to meet them in the strong emotion they are, which is hard for a parent because you know, when you see your kid suffering or in pain, you feel it in your body.
Yeah.
It's this visceral thing, right?
I was sick.
Yeah.
But that was how I reacted. And then I said, quick, let's go get chips somewhere.
Chips. Make everything okay.
I agree. I just think it's something that I'm conscious of, and I see it and then obviously you're in the schoolyard and you're watching other parents and you can't help thinking, God, I wish, look, there's the cool dad. Can I be the cool dad? I'd like to be the cool dad just once.
But this is such an important point, because what I see everyday life mirrors our sexual life. So you're saying you want to be the cool dad,
yeah.
But that's like in our sexual life saying, oh, I want to be the person that has sex every night. I want to be the person that, I want to be someone with a wide variety of interests, where we actually might be the person that really less likes to have one partner and just snuggle on down with a coffee and a whatever. And we all have a different sort of manifestation of our sexuality. And I think there are some people that are more cool, and I know cool sort of changes over time, but it's only human to want to be the person who looks like they're having the better time. You know, the grass is always greener. So I think that is one of the skills as we can develop as parents, you know, in an ideal world, and that we develop in our children, this sense of self-acceptance. My sexuality or the way I view the world or whatever is mine, and yours is yours, and they're both valid, and that's okay.
Do you find there's somewhat of a conflict between times past and present, where we are trying to be more helpful to our children now, yet at the same time, our kids have far less freedom than they did in the past? And I mean, far, far less freedom than they did in the past. I mean, they had much bigger ranges. They were allowed to actually play more with each other, whereas now it's all very controlled.
Mm. I'm thinking about that.
And that's okay.
The world is as the world is.
Yeah.
Right? So when I'm thinking about parenting, I think we create more hassle than we need to when we hope that the world, we wish the world could be different. Right? So we do our best managing to bring up our children in a world that is, yeah, far more controlled. They're far more scheduled. They have way more screen time than we ever did. They don't have a lot of freedom in terms of ranging. Well, my kids don't, because they're city kids. Only country kids may still do that. And so for me, it's about, where is that fine line between accepting that the world has changed, right, and still wanting the best for my children? So it's like, I find the point where it is possible to create change. That is not way back here and giving up all my kids' devices and expecting them just to entertain themselves in the backyard with whoever kid, you know, comes over the wall. I'm very much of the opinion that I parent in this age. And so, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do the best I can with my kids. And, that's okay. There has been changes throughout history. Children have been brought up in different ways throughout history. And we just have this point in history. And I think if we demonize it, it just makes it much more difficult for us to stay present with our kids. Cause I'm not alone. I know, but I am constantly in this battle of, oh, my kids got too much screen. My kids are having too much screen. What am I going to do about the screen? The screen, the screen, the screen, the screen. And the screen is the thing that we mostly have our fights over at home. could it be possible for me to go, you know what? Okay, screen is part of it. I'm going to, you know, talk about moderation and maybe use screen as a way to teach a life lesson or whatever. I know an anonymous story about a 7-year-old who had a family iPad, and the 7-year-old took a photo of his genitals and he put it on as the wallpaper for the iPad, as you do, because when you have a penis, you're delighted with yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, so that penis was there on the iPad, and then, another child came over to the house for a play date, and the sibling said, oh yeah, look at the iPad and look at the picture on the wallpaper. Right. And so that other child saw someone's genitals, and the owner of the penis was absolutely mortified and embarrassed by the fact that this girl from another school had seen his penis on the iPad wallpaper. Right. What an amazing opportunity to learn that you don't put photos of your genitals in places where people are going to see them, right? Like, that was a life lesson which we wouldn't have experienced if we didn't have that technology in that family for that thing to happen. So yeah. I think it's possible that we can look at the world now and go, okay, this is where we are parenting, and we are teaching our kids to exist in this world because we can't change the way things are.
Yeah, you think, like, there is a terrible joke about the lads having to sit and have the portrait artist draw the dick pics back in the 1920s before. but now I'll edit that out.
Why?
Look, you make a great point. You can't put the toothpaste back into the tube. Mm. This is the world that we live in now, and we have to actually come to an accommodation, and we actually have to be more educated ourselves and actually be more cognizant and trusting of our children to make the right decisions, that if we do the supports and hope that their values are in the right place, or their heart is in the right place, and also accept that they're going to fuck up, because we all fuck up.
We all fuck up. Yeah. We all do. And I think if we take away the right to fuck up from our kids, we're doing them a huge disservice.
Mm. Yeah.
We do all fuck up. I think that's true to say. Well, thank you so much for coming in and having a chat with us. It's really interesting. And I'm going to go back. I have looked at a couple of your YouTube videos, but I will go back and I will look at more of your YouTube videos. They are very interesting. I suppose mine are almost over there. Like, my youngest is 12. Thank God. You know, I'm over that stage. But yeah, grandkids now, I have to think about it, isn't it?
And I welcome, like, any questions. I love getting questions, because my YouTube channel is really all about answering real questions from real parents around Ireland.
Where can people find you?
My website is thetalk.ie. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of information from me there. You can find me on Instagram, thetalk.ie, the Twitter.
At talk.ie.
Oh yeah, thetalk.ie. Pretty much thetalk.ie, that's where I am. So, yeah.
So cool. Thank you so much for coming over. I really enjoyed that, insofar as that I didn't totally cringe. and I hope listeners got as much out of it as I did. Folks, do head over on the patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Leave us the price of a cup of coffee. It actually helps keep
the show going. 2 cups of coffee, because it keeps me locked in the boot. It keeps saying, I'm not letting you out till we get more patrons. And I'm going, okay, Tony, I will plug it on the show. I will.
Thanks for listening, folks. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.